With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Three down, four to go, gang. Welcome to the Football Ramble. England stroll on, but it's the end of the road for Scotland. It's Wednesday, 23rd of June. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Easy, come on, we're back, Jim.
Yeah, we are, where we belong.
Damn right.
My first opportunity for an easy.
Oh.
Is it your first of the tournament?
My second, actually.
Your second as well, Marcus.
Oh, it's always good to, as Raheem Sterling testified against Croatia, it's good to get your first one.
Yeah.
And it's also lovely to get the second one.
Yeah, I've done a Welsh one.
Yes.
Of course, which wasn't quite the same, because I was worried about the pronunciation. So this one is a lot more free and easy. Free and easy.
There you are, you see.
Yeah.
It's sad for Scotland, of course.
Yeah.
Commiserations.
We'll come on to them, though, won't we?
We will come on to
them. They'll
get their time. They'll get their time.
Yeah.
Indeed, yeah. England, top of the group, with an interesting display. Because it's tournament football, guys. It's tournament football.
Everyone's saying that.
I don't know if you've noticed, Jim, it's tournament football, all right? Which means no entertainment.
No.
You understand, it's interesting. The chat coming from England is that it was a more positive atmosphere at Wembley.
Yeah.
Which is good.
It seemed like it was.
Yeah, England, of course, will be back there for the second round. That is a huge game. We'll talk about that in a minute. But what did you make of the display, Jim? Are you sort of happy? Are you sort of content? Are you a bit disappointed? Because there's all these emotions going on with some England fans.
If I may quote one of the great football minds, it was second half good. Sorry, first half good, second half not so good, effectively, wasn't it? It was very much...
Who's that, Marcus?
Quoting Sven, though.
Yeah.
but yeah, it was... I mean, the first half, there were a lot of positives to take from that. I think, obviously, Jack Grealish and Bukayo Saka were both fantastic. Mm-hmm. And you want to see more of them. And obviously, you hope that when Grealish has been subbed off, it's because the intention is to use him a bit more later as well. But the second half makes me a little bit concerned about England's ability to go through the gears. I think we're all thinking that perhaps they're holding back a little bit, then, you know, they're going to save the real, you know, barnstorming stuff for when it's needed. But we don't know that it's in the locker. Do you know what I mean? I feel like if you're playing against France, Portugal, or Germany, whoever comes next,
or Hungary,
you have a bit of respect, right? For Hungary. Yeah. No one's given them any respect.
No, this is true. I'd love us to play them and smash them. But I think you're going to need more than one goal, and England look like they might struggle to provide that.
Really,
you look furious with me.
I think England could have scored more goals last night. They wanted. Personally, I don't understand the negativity. I genuinely think it's baffling. Mm. Like, I think that
even Pete wasn't negative.
Well, quite.
He had a lot. He sent us a message. He says, "Guys, I've had a drink."
Yeah, that made me reassess. I was thinking, well, bloody hell, even Pete's being positive. I don't think for a second. And I think the most insightful thing anyone said in that broadcast last night was our friend Pugach, who said, "If other teams were doing this, you'd be going, oh." They're just going about their business. They haven't conceded a goal. They're doing this, they're doing that.
We have seen some of those other teams win tournaments, though.
Fine, but we can't be objective about it, obviously, because it's England. It's harder for us to do so, if not impossible. Mm-hmm. But you're fine. They're not banging in the goals all over the place. Look at the games they've had to play. Right, they've played Croatia, who we've seen and we're going to come on to, are capable. They're a capable side. They go away from home in a crunch, clutch game, and they just ruthlessly take the game away from Scotland. We had a derby game against Scotland, which we got dragged into the trenches with. Mm-hmm. And we've had this game against Czech Republic, who beat Scotland, who look okay. And Southgate said himself, I know it suits him to say this, but I actually agree with him. Mm-hmm. Their FIFA ranking is a red herring. They're not as bad as they look. They're a good team. They've got good players. And we've seen how, you don't need to take his word for it. Look how good Suchet's been this season in the Premier League. Look how good Soufal's been. Patrick Schick set the tournament on fire. And we've not conceded a goal. And there is definitely more to come from England.
You certainly hope so. I mean, a lot of people were saying, oh, because England, you know, not that long ago, you know, they beat Czech Republic 5-0 at Wembley. But more recently, Czech Republic beat England in the group, but for whatever that's worth. But, I mean, England, I know what you mean. I think that people want what is happening with the Italian side at the moment. And I understand that. That is what you want. But Southgate has clearly... trying to take his lead from, say, Deschamps and France, which is why it is absolutely crucial that France don't finish second in Group F today.
and that's the thing. And I said that going into this tournament, England's best chance is just to go for it. It's just to trade with teams and hope you score more goals. And I said that because I didn't think that England were capable of the level of control they've shown so far in this tournament.
So has your opinion changed slightly?
It has, but with the caveat that I don't know if they've got enough control. And I don't know if they can maintain or improve even their control against a better team. But the point being that I don't know why people can't sit. The two things that are absolutely baffling me about England, this tournament and the coverage of it. One is people seem to think we can play 15 players. Why aren't you playing him? Why aren't you playing him? Why aren't you playing?
There's definitely that.
I can't fucking play all of them, you know. And secondly, why we're so negative about a team who, if you actually watch the matches, right, maybe people are just down the pub with their mates and they've got half an hour on the game or whatever. Well, you know, fair enough, they just got a different opinion to me, which is absolutely fair, obviously. They're trying to do things like show that they can control situations. If you go back to, even if you go back to 2018, it was a bit of a roller coaster. Yep. England weren't in control of anything, and they weren't in control in 2016, obviously, and they haven't been in control. I don't think they've been in control of themselves in a football tournament since I've been watching football, right? They even go all the way back to World Cup 90 or Euro 96. They're not in control of it. They're capable of moments. And what they're trying to do here, and you can see it if you care enough, go back and watch the game from last night. Watch what the fullbacks are doing. What's Kyle Walker known for in his club career? He's up and down all day. His pace is ridiculous. He can hurt teams. He plays a role in that Man City team. The amount of times he had the ball last night, looked up the wing, looked inside, and just played the simple square ball because I think he's been coached. I know Gary Neville disagreed. Fair enough. He probably knows more than me. But it looked to me like they've been coached to say, we are going to control the game for a period of time. And then, as you said, Marcus, before we came in, and I'm sure you can expand on it, they go on raids. Yeah. They go, for the next 10 minutes, we're gonna execute the press, yeah. and then we're going to go on raid, yeah. and Maguire's going to be given the opportunity to go forward. Stones are going to go forward. We're going to play long balls from Pickford. We're going to pick out little runners. Mm. They seem pretty well in control of things for the most part, and that's the key. Czech Republic still had opportunities. Yep. It's not perfect. It never will be perfect. But I would be overall very, very positive about this group so far. But the caveat is that it's still relatively untested against what I would consider to be a genuinely good team.
This is it, isn't it? I mean, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think England have set the agenda very, very well in the group generally. A bit different against Scotland, but as you've already touched on, that was, you know, that was dragged into the trenches in a slightly different situation. But this is it, isn't it? It's like, can you set an agenda against France? You know, they are probably more likely to be the ones, you know, in control of the tempo. Mm-hmm. But is part of you not, like, kind of excited about the fact that we're going to have one of the big boys next? Almost certainly.
Yeah.
Like,
go on then. Let's test it.
Well, I think imagine if England get through. Imagine if they beat, like, a Portugal or a France or a Germany, Marcus. Do it. Imagine it now.
He imagines it all the time.
Yeah. Like, but that's the point, isn't it, about tournament football, is that... Of course you imagine these things because it's possible. Mm. That's why. It doesn't make you an arrogant England fan or in any of that bollocks, which I don't think most England fans are, no. actually. It's unhelpful sections of the press. But you know, and to back this up, how many times have we heard actually members of the media and the press talking about, oh, what would we prefer? Would we prefer an easier draw? Do you think they're saying that the French side? Probably not. Do you think do you think Mancini's going, oh, lads, maybe we'll finish second? Because that's not how they're going about it. England do, because they're aware of their limitations and also how it worked out well in Russia. But you can't go, oh, we don't want to finish top of the group and then we'll have to play in a foreign... Yeah. And I don't think Wembley's it's not Anfield on a Champions League night or something, but it's less disruptive if you have to move around and that's
why the way the England fans behaved last night was encouraging. There was a lot of positivity because England fans can turn that into a really difficult place for England to play, which we don't want to see. This is a big opportunity. When's the next time we're going to get tournament games at Wembley? We just don't know. Mm. And so... it can become a real positive thing for England to be able to play at Wembley.
Yeah.
I also would like to factor in the idea that there's a few other bits and pieces that people need to take into account when they look at the game last night and have ridiculous expectations or just cannot, for their own, no matter how hard they try, cannot even know what they're looking at when they're watching the game. I appreciate people don't watch as much football as the rest of us because we're doing this for a job, but you don't need to search very far to know that Jordan Henderson got 45 minutes last night, hasn't played since February. Maguire's come in, has been out for 6 weeks, looked okay. Mm-hmm. You know, they had Mount and Chilwell ruled out the morning of the game, and Southgate said we couldn't go on the training field and work on any of our defensive shape, which we had to change before the game, and they've still kept a clean sheet against a team and an informed striker that have done pretty well. So let's be realistic here. You can't win a tournament here. You can't win it against Czech Republic in the final group game. But you can fucking lose it. And they didn't. They won. And they won pretty well. And the second half, they didn't show much ambition. But no one thinks it's because they couldn't have done it. Mm. I cannot see how you would watch the second half of that game and go, England weren't capable of fashioning more chances. Either I'm just the most out of touch human being on the planet, or people are talking absolute fucking shit.
Look, I agree with you, but we should talk about some of the personnel as well. And Jim, I come to you. Mm. I said to you a few times throughout the Premier League season, is Bukayo Saka the man who's going to win the Euros for England? And you sort of scoffed and scorned at
me. We were talking about it a lot, me and Mark, and Jim was fucking talking us down.
Jim was doing that. I mean, it was his sixth cap for England and his third man of the match performance. So 50% of the time he plays, he's man of the match for England. So, Jim, put that question to you again.
Have you changed your mind?
I believe... I believe we all sang about how easy this whole thing's going to be at the top of the show. So I would assume that like my answer would be clear from that.
But on a more sort of serious note, you must have loved seeing your man Saka.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we all loved seeing him, but being an Arsenal fan.
Oh, he's like your football little brother.
Yeah.
As an Arsenal fan. He's just such an adorable man.
Yes.
And he had a fantastic display as well. Again, I go back to the bromance between him and Grealish, which seems to be like be flowering both on and off the pitch. And I mean, a lot of people were a bit surprised at his inclusion over Jadon Sancho, and I felt a little bit sorry for him. I think he's perhaps a bit overlooked.
I do think that Southgate maybe forgot that Sancho was in the squad, and then in the last 10 minutes he turned and went, Oh, I did pick you. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Oh, you. Oh, all right, then last turn. But yes, yeah, Saka was in there, and it was a slight surprise inclusion. But, he, you know, Southgate was full of praise, rightly so, called him a slippery eel at one point. But the thing is with Saka, Jim, he plays on the left or the right. He can be a little bit more defensive as a wing-back, can go forward, has got pace, has got a bit of flair, has got a bit of attacking ability, nice sort of directness, but also has a great functionality about him as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he carries the ball really well, doesn't he? And he will, you know, if you're talking about players raiding, he is a fantastic option to have there.
He is a raider.
He really is. And I mean, and Southgate was talking about, you know, different games present different challenges and therefore your lineups reflect that. And he is a really, really useful asset if, you know, if you do need to actually set this agenda, as we've been talking about.
So England, we assume it will play, well, they will play a big side in the next round. Is Saka the man to do that? Because again, can offer a little bit of cover, sort of tucking in when England needs to kind of go to a sort of a five across the midfield. If you like,
It's quite hard to drop him after a display like that, isn't it?
But it is. But it really is.
I really don't know whether he'll start again.
Foden missed out because he had a yellow card. Yeah. Southgate was very.
But the shuffling of the pack, it might have to be done again, because I think I'm right in saying that Chilwell and Mount's isolation ends midnight the night before of the game.
I think it's unlikely.
So they can't train as part of the group till then.
I mean, Luke Shaw's, he had a good performance last night. He was a bit better. Trippier could come in, probably England's best defensive fullback. And people say, oh, well, you can't have a right footer at left back. We'll speak to Dennis Irwin about that. Because Roy Keane would. So Chilwell will be less of a miss. It's a shame for Chilwell, having just won the Champions League, and he's obviously a very good player.
He's not playing a part at all.
It is a great shame for him, of course, but Mount is the one. Now, if Mount misses out, who then do you go for? Well, it depends who you get in the next round, because Portugal are a different side to France, to Hungary, to Germany, of course. But, I mean, one player that everybody wanted to see, Luke, was Jack Grealish.
Yeah.
He obviously set up the goal. There was boos, I hope, in a sort of a more tongue-in-cheek kind of way when he went off.
Yeah.
But he seemed to have a lovely time.
Yeah, and he's a very, very exciting player. And he's one of these players that so for example, my wife's a football enthusiast, right? She likes watching football, she likes watching the games, but she would be the first to say that she's not got a background of watching any football regularly. She doesn't know that much about it, but she gets instantly what Jack Grealish is all about, because it's such a universal thing.
He's so magnetic, isn't he? And the touches and...
His technique is unbelievable, his appreciation of space is unbelievable, and he's one of those players that despite, you know, the standardising of football and the overloading of kind of data and statistics in football, it's very difficult to quantify him. He just feels like a player that when he's got the ball at his feet, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think he tailed off in the second half. I think he probably, again, I mean, I might be setting myself up for a gigantic fall here with the takes I'm on today, but I feel like he kind of drifted out of the game in the second half, but that might well be just because... You know, he felt like he knew he was going to come off after 60 minutes because England had already qualified, and I think that's probably what the setup was going to be. So he wasn't as bright in the second half. But in the first half, I kind of echo what I said about Foden on Lions Watch when we came into the tournament. At their best, when someone like him or Foden, I know they're different players, but the quality they've got, it's very hard for people to deal with him. Like, Czech Republic look at... And this is why kind of when we did the show after the Scotland game, I said to you guys... I don't think Scotland want to play against the Grealish.
No.
I think if Grealish is there, they don't know what to do. Because it's very hard to pick him up. It's very hard to know. He's basically playing in a free role. He's popping up all over the place. And therefore, it's hard to kind of rein him in. And the work he did down the left-hand side for the goal that Sterling eventually scored, it's just absolute quality. I know he got a flick on the cross, but he knew exactly what he's doing. He seems to have so much time.
The only thing you would say about Grealish is that he likes to drift out left, and I know Sterling then filled that space sort of quite well, and obviously Kane can do that too. So again, this idea that you have to play symmetrically, you know, the formation has to be symmetrical and so on, is not always the case.
They don't really do that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And depends who you have on the left wing, because Sterling's always going to play a little bit further forward. That's quite good for, say, Kyle Walker, you would maybe say to one of your central midfielders, just... you know, have an eye, you know, play on a more kind of, you know, you're obviously in the centre, but, you know, take one step to the right, or, you know, all these kind of things. But the thing is with Grealish, though, Jim, is it, defensively, if you're playing against a better side, which England may well do in the next round, do you then throw him in? Because, that is a big question, because people will say, ah, oh, but can he play as a unit? Would you actually be better off having sort of, say, Bellingham or Henderson in there as well with Rice or Phillips, you know, the three? Or do you say, nah, sod it, you know, let's...
Well, I think there has to be an element of sod it, doesn't there? To some degree, if you're playing against one of these big teams, because you are going to... That lock is harder to pick And I mean, he's a Swiss Army knife, really, isn't he? Like yeah. Jack Grealish, he has so much in his game in an attacking sense. And you know, you've got to score. You have to score against these teams. It's very, very difficult to do so. So I think for me, it's an absolute no brainer, really. But obviously, I'm not picking the England team.
I think the 4-2-3-1 suits England better.
I think so.
And I think if you look at how they started the game yesterday, I know they changed it halfway through the second half or whatever. But if you look at the setup, it kind of suits the players. You can play Rice and Phillips in there, but if you need a little bit more, Rice is a. It's funny, isn't it? Because Rice in the club,
a lot is expected of him.
Yeah, but in the club season, this season, he started to push forward a lot more.
Yeah.
But then in the first game, you saw Phillips pushing forward a lot more, and Bellingham can also do that, right? So you've got three players you can play in those two slots there.
Well, now Henderson's
that's not allowed, but you've got to pick two of them.
Yeah.
And you've got Henderson, right? So you've got four players in there, all that can fill that role nicely. Grealish is perfect. I know he drifts out wide, but I would probably play Grealish behind Kane. And I would, controversial, I know he scored, but I don't think he had a brilliant game last night. I'd probably pick Foden over Sterling on the left. And you've got to pick who you choose on the right. Sancho's really comfortable on the right. Saka's comfortable on the right.
After that performance.
Yeah, it'd be very harsh on the kid.
It would.
To me, it doesn't feel like you've got as many kind of, not square pegs and round holes, because that's overstating the case, but you haven't got as many problems to solve with your selection if you play a 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, Harry Maguire was a positive though, as you mentioned earlier, and the way he brought the ball out of defence, you can see that. I mean, Mings hasn't struck, it's a bit harsh on Mings, and he did get some minutes last night.
I think that's why I brought him on.
Yeah, but I think, you know, Mings is under no illusion. Stones and Maguire, they started together in the World Cup in Russia. They've started a lot of games since then. And they are probably, obviously, Gomez has been injured for a long time, but they're probably England's two best centre-halves. So he will sort of understand that. He seems like a decent chap. Yeah. But obviously he'll be disappointed. But having Maguire at the back, Jim, was definitely a positive. And getting 90 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't look like a player that was coming back from injury, did he? He just slotted in perfectly well.
And I kind of forgot about that.
Absolutely, yeah. No, that was a huge positive. Same with Henderson as well, to you know, slightly different degree. But yeah, I expect that at some point there will be a backs against the wall job where all three of those players are on the pitch as well. So keeping Minks kind of involved in this way is probably quite smart.
Yeah. I wanted to come into this record today, had a question for you guys, just based on the thing we were talking about earlier with control. I don't think England are fully in control of their environments yet. And I think that they, you know, against a better team, it's going to be tested more than ever, obviously. But did you guys feel like, in complete difference and at complete odds to what it's been like in earlier tournaments, England, do you feel that they're much more comfortable with a one goal lead than they have been in the past?
Yes.
Yeah,
and that's a big plus, right? And that's kind of what I'm getting at.
But this is, Southgate has said, you know, we learned a lot from Russia. And I think he was still haunted by the fact that England were 1-0 up against Croatia in that semi-final, and they didn't really...
And they were also absolutely fucking knackered by then.
Yeah, and absolutely. Those two things, I think, that are really at play here. The next game is huge, because if England, as you say, Jim, if they go into that game and it's a bit lacklustre and they go out, everyone will say, well, bloody hell, you the handbrake was on too much. You should have let them go in the group, so they were a bit sort of buzzing for that game. But we will simply have to wait and see. We can talk about this, that and the other. We don't know who the opponent is, and the game hasn't happened, so we shall see.
Scottish fans that we cover later in the show are enjoying the show right now, because they're thinking, they're doing it again.
Yeah.
They're getting carried away again.
But what we want, isn't it?
But we're not really getting carried away. I think actually a lot more England fans are a bit more... I've gone big on them. Have you heard the first half of the show? I've gone big on them.
I said just before we came in, the Portugal and France cannot draw, because then England will have France in the next round, and that will... Well, but I mean, I've been saying for months, though.
But how badly did France deal with a big partisan crowd in Hungary?
Yeah. Well, do we get the Hungarians in at Wembley?
Well, just saying. If they've got nothing else on.
Let's not do that. For a number of reasons, obviously, just to finish, you know, that Wembley will have a good fair few thousand more fans in, which will obviously be to England's benefit, you would think, although one or two times
they've got to do what they did last night.
They do. And also, we have to on the Ben Chilwell Mason Mount stuff. I mean, it does seem absolutely ridiculous, but you know, we just echo Southgate's thoughts, I think, on there, so there's not really much else we can say, although I did quite like Roy Keane's take on it when he said
a less sympathetic take from Roy Keane
when he said about Chilwell and Mount, because I thought it was quite nice actually seeing them both congratulate Billy Gilmore after the game and all that kind of stuff, and Roy Keane said, why would you want to speak to an opposition player for 20 minutes? I mean, it wasn't 20 minutes, but okay, it makes no sense. I very rarely talk to anyone for more than 5 minutes.
Well, he did in that car with Michael Richards.
He did. And very much against his own will.
Yeah.
But what I like about him's dynamic with Michael Richards is he's looking at Michael Richards and thinking, he is a bit, those arms look very powerful. I'm just going to have to sit and take this.
I remember there was an interview with Roy Keane a while back where he talked about how he was asked whether he felt like he genuinely has won the Champions League as a player because of 99 with the final. Do. And he said no.
Yeah.
And then it was Gary Neville interviewing him. He said, okay, yeah, but Roy, if you didn't play any games at all apart from the final, would you have felt like you won the Champions League? And he went, no.
Yeah.
What's the solution?
He has to
here?
Play every game.
Yeah, every minute of every game.
Yeah, and bless him for that. Mm. Right then, let's have a quick break.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Danny Welbeck, and you're listening to the Football Ramble.
Certainly are, Danny. You certainly are, ladies and gentlemen. Right, it's time for emails.
They're reading out your emails. Yeah. They're reading out your emails. Because they were sent in to show at footballramble.com, where all the best banter originates from. Stuff about Sven,
yeah. So many nice touches in that one.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the best of David Rossing there.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Do you want an email?
Yeah. Well, after that, you would be a bit of a letdown.
Yeah, it would. We've got one from Daniel Braham, like Graham with a B, or it could be Daniel Braham. So apologies to you,
Daniel. I'd go Braham.
Yeah, probably Braham. Yeah. Probably more likely. Daniel says, Jules' suggestion of doing draws throughout the stages of tournaments for increased excitement got me thinking, which, as we know, is a dangerous thing to do. So here is a suggestion. A secret draw.
Ooh.
Each of the teams who go through the groups get transported, I assume by some sort of UEFA-branded special ops team, to one of the various stadiums across Europe. But here's the kicker. They don't know who they'll be facing until they go out onto the pitch. Maximum drama, admittedly minimal planning. Perhaps I'm imagining a wrestling-type scenario wherein the Belgians are already out on the pitch, then the floodlights go off and the Marseillaise is kicked in as Kylian and co enter the arena. Excitement? Lots of it. Logistical problems? You know it.
That's Kylian Mbappe's music.
I actually quite like that idea.
But what do you think, Jules? I thought Jules made a really interesting point yesterday where she said there's nothing to stop people doing the draw between each round.
Yeah.
They do it in the Champions League. Yeah, it works really well. I think it would personally be a bit better.
Same. It's an interesting one, isn't it?
You don't get people settling for places or like mapping out the paths.
People moaning about England thinking, oh, we've got this opposition. You just go, we're going to have to play to our strengths.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the problem would become, the problem is a logistical one, where you wouldn't have enough time to ferry everyone around to different places. I know it's not always a pan-European tournament, but if you're doing it in like a Germany, which is quite a big country, it'd be difficult to manage.
I mean, they're not going to do this, but we can, like England going through to the quarterfinals of this tournament, we can imagine it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, dear.
Okay, fellas, I've got an email here from Robert Smith. Probably not that one. I don't think it's that one. He emailed yesterday and signed off as a Scottish fan with, fuck it, I'll be optimistic. Easy. He then wrote at midnight. This email came in at midnight after he'd done that. I'd like to rescind my last point from my previous email.
Oh, poor Rob.
I would, however, like to thank Steve Clark and the squad for reigniting my love for the Scottish national team. Mm. It's been a long 23 years with some utter shite in there, but these last few months have been amazing. Getting to a tournament, playing three games and going out is better than not making the tournament at all. Bring on Euro 2044.
Oh.
I just thought it was really cool to include that email because we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that, you know, it's really difficult as three English England fans here to not sound patronising, but we don't mean to sound patronising. Yeah. It's great that they were there. It's great that we got to play against them. It's great that they had three games and all the rest of it, including a couple of games at Hampden, which I'm sure they felt would have hoped they'd gone better. But nevertheless, it's great to have Scotland back.
Yeah, it does seem to have been a positive experience for the camp, doesn't it? Steve Clark's talking about how it won't be, you know, won't be this long before they're back again, and there's a lot to learn from it. Now they focus on World Cup qualification.
He said, you know, we'll make sure that we're at the next tournament, and if not the tournament after that, and if not the tournament after that. I was like, okay, stop there, Steve. Because you're going to go past 23 years in a minute. but I know what you mean. The monkey off the back was qualifying for the tournament. I mean, that's quite clear. I mean, even when they played Serbia in that playoff, you know, Serbia were probably slight favourites for it. So to go through, and obviously they've got 100% record in penalty shootouts as well, one out of one. But I have to say, a lot of people have said it was that Czech Republic game. You know, it was obviously a poor start, and they were up against it. They showed a lot of fight against England, of course. But Luke, you said that you just wondered if they were spent after that England performance. And Clark said that himself, maybe they'd used up a lot of energy.
They were beaten 3-1, obviously, last night by a team that were able and capable of just taking the game away from
a better
them,
side.
Which is always a danger. But I do think you could kind of see it happening. You could kind of see that they gave a lot of themselves against England. They had to do that. There would have been no other way to approach it, given the fan base, given the fact that it's a derby game, given the fact that they've waited so long to come to a tournament and to play England at one is an amazing thing for everyone. It's very, very difficult. And Steve Clark, as you said the same thing, for them to be able to lift it. I did actually think it was a Modric masterclass last night. I think it looks better for England that this has now happened. I think you can kind of get a little bit more context around how England were able to shackle Croatia in the first game, which could have gone either way. In quite a weird atmosphere going into it, all the knee and all that type of stuff with the fans. So it makes it look better for England. I don't want to refer it back to England. I want to talk about Scotland. I felt that when they got the goal just before half time, I just felt like if you can keep this really tight and you can get to say, I'm not an expert in Scottish football at all, but I think if you said to Steve Clark at half time, you can get to 1-0 with 15 minutes to go, where you take it, I think it'd have bitten your hand off, because then you never know. Then you're in the lap of the gods. You can throw everything into it. But unfortunately, I think they looked a bit leggy in the second half. I think they found it difficult. I think that Modric, as I say, was able to... That goal's a heartbreaker. It's a brilliant goal. It's a fucking heartbreaker. They've had two heartbreaking, brilliant goals against him in this tournament. And I also think, I don't think it's strictly accurate to say that Billy Gilmour would have been able to deal with it better and would have been able to do something different for
Scotland. I mean, that was disruptive, of course.
But that's a big bloke for them. Yeah. I mean, he's definitely their best midfield player, right? And finally, before I hand over to Jim...
He's only got a few caps.
I know, but he's already the best midfield player. It's a fact of the matter, you know? Bukayo Saka's got six caps. He looked the best player on the pitch last night. It happens, right? I was really, really impressed, chiefly, with Andy Robertson throughout the whole tournament. I think they've got a good in there. I think given the fact that he's still got a bit of time on his side, that he's still only 27, so he's probably got 4 or 5 years left, he'll definitely take him into the next tournament. More. I thought he spoke really well. I thought he led by example. I thought he did the really great thing after the England game, where he singled out all the players that had been criticised the game before and gave him praise publicly. Yeah. When he came out the tunnel against Croatia last night, it didn't work out for them. He looked like a man on a fucking mission. Mm. He looked like a proper captain. If you go back and watch him coming out the tunnel, the look in his face.
He's got that look in his eye.
I'm following that guy.
The only thing he said, which a lot of Scottish people said before and after the England game, which didn't really stand up, is when they felt that some of the English sort of pundits, in particular Rio Ferdinand, were disrespectful to Scotland, because Ferdinand said quite confidently, I think England win by 2 goals. Mm. And they said, you know, it's absolutely ridiculous, they don't rate us. And then in the same breath said, but we're underdogs, you know, we're not expected. Yeah. Those points can't live in harmony.
They wanted their cake and eat it, but that's part of the build-up, I think. Mm-hmm. I think you want to kind of get everyone together and you want to say, look, you know, we it's kind of paradoxical, because you want to go, we've got the players here to do this, but at the same time, we want everyone to be against us, because it's a bit of a siege mentality. I think they've they've also got to take a lot of credit from the fact they've got a young team. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it was James McFadden who made the point on the radio last night. He said, after World Cup 98, a lot of those players retired. Yeah, it was the last dance for them.
Oh, and it was. Well, as I say, a while, actually. They were very close to the Euros, of course, and gave England a right old scare in 2000.
And then a few retired after that as
but
well.
But then afterwards, and then you had the Bertie Vogts years, which used to wind Charlie Nicholas up something chronic, you know. But they did get to the tournament, Jim, and that would hopefully inspire them, of course. It's a very, very difficult task, and it's harder to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah.
But would you overall reasonably positive? Because it's a tough group as well. People underrated the Czechs, and obviously they're playing against Croatia, who 3 years ago were in a World Cup final.
But also as well, Steve Clarke has done a brilliant job of integrating both Andy Robertson and Kieran Tierney into that defence. That could be a huge problem if you've got two of who are nominally assumed to be your best players, essentially in the same position. That's a very difficult thing to get right. But with Tierney going into that back three like that, and the two of them dovetailing, he's made a virtue of it, which is excellent management in situation. The problem is goals, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's such an obvious thing to say.
It is.
But you get the sense, like, a Scottish goal is often a bit of a collector's item. And they need to just get either a bit more ruthless or maybe, dare I even say, a little bit more daring going forward.
Well, I don't think... But people focused on...
They created chances.
Well, this is it. People focused on the goals... They scored one goal and got 1 point. England scored two goals and got seven points.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the goals conceded that was the problem. Now, I understand Schick's goal. You hold your hands up there. I don't think David Marshall was at fault particularly. I think that is just an absolute wonder goal. At least he's consistent, was rather angry and said, you know, Modric's goal, they could have closed him down. The problem is we talk about the energy and whatnot. But I think defensively, which is what they... they conceded five. You know, that's the problem, I think.
But Souness is talking from the heart there.
Yeah, of course he is.
Knows there's not been a football player that's achieved more as a midfield player in the British history than Graeme Souness. He knows how to play in midfield. He knows what it's like when you come against a quality player. Maybe he doesn't quite appreciate how much the game's moved on, but that's a separate point. He's angry that Scotland have gone out. You can't... Modric was... He had the most touches, the most passes.
No, of course.
A goal, an assist.
But I'm...
I don't think it's reasonable to say that.
But I'm saying, though, that people have focused on the lack of goals for Scotland, and I think that that's a little bit harsh, because, as I say, they've only scored one fewer than England, England have gone through, but I think that they were unlucky against the Czech Republic. They might well have scored, and it was great that they did score. I think it would have been... I think they would have rather lost 3-1 than 2-0, if you see what I mean.
They get a goal, of course.
That gave it a little bit of a roar, and they'll remember that, and certainly McGregor will, who scored. But you can't forget that Scotland were the poorest team in that group. Despite that performance at Wembley, you know, they are one of the lowest ranked sides,
of course,
in that competition.
But defensively, that's fine, but that's only half the story, Marcus. The reason that's only half the story is because we all know, because we've all seen it, that Scotland created quite a lot of chances and no one took them. If they had taken them, they'd still be in the tournament.
But when you say they created a lot of chances, was it Dykes against Czech Republic might have done better? There's a bit of a... I think that they were, what they did against England in terms of attacking was, dare I suggest, not slightly overrated, it was overstated. That actually, against England, according to Sky Sports and their stats, which whoever they get them from, maybe Opta, forgive me if I've got that wrong, is that in that game, clear-cut chances, as they defined it, England had three, which I'm guessing Stones, Mount and maybe Luke Shaw, maybe slightly generous, maybe two... and Scotland was zero. You think about the efforts at goal Scotland had that you wouldn't, you think about expected goals and all that kind of stuff. Did they create, on another day, they might have won that game. I appreciate it. And they had some good efforts at goal.
Scotland's expected goals against Croatia was double Croatia's.
Really?
Yeah. And the expected goals conceded from Scotland against the two Czech Republic goals they conceded and the three Croatian goals they conceded were all very, very low expected goals.
Okay, so fair enough then. So that's I take your point there. I can't argue with that. No arguments there. But again, against Croatia, the expected goals, you know, there was no sitters. You know, again, another, it wasn't quite there and so on. But because Modric is probably
that's
not expected to just waft that one in the corner. But he's got that quality.
Well, exactly. That's the problem, though, isn't it? That will absolutely just knock the wind out of you. A goal like that at that stage.
Because they have that in their locker. You saw Perisic's goal against the Czech Republic. And unfortunately for Scotland, you know, we can say it's a great shame they've gone out, and it is. But actually, I can't stress enough, the monkey off the back was getting to that tournament. Yep. And that's the real plus here. They weren't expected to go through. I understand that they look at Wales and they've gone through, and in 5 years ago, Northern Ireland went through as well. Yeah. But different tournament, different time. And also, Wales do have a couple of players, namely in Bale and Ramsey, of great quality. So it does give Scotland to something to build on, hopefully.
So Croatia have got a chance, I think, just turn attention to them quickly.
Well, yeah.
Of giving people, giving this tournament a bit of a bloody nose, because they obviously, I thought England controlled the game quite well against Croatia. I think it looks better in retrospect, as I've already said. They'll go through and play the runner-up in Spain's group now.
Yeah.
So if you expect it to go to form, that's going to be, what, Sweden or Slovakia or something. I can't quite remember, but it'll be
group... Well, it could be Poland as well.
Yeah. So it's a winnable game.
But either...
Then they go up against the... If it goes to form, they'll go up against the winner of Group F.
Yes.
So,
and then
the
probably
quarters.
Belgium or Italy. Again, going on form, it's very difficult to predict, I understand.
All I'm saying is we've already beaten.
Yeah.
We've already beaten once. I'm all for doing it again.
But I mean, again, when you start going into the whole, which side of the draw would England go, and all that kind of stuff, you're going to play a big team. I understand playing your way into a tournament, and again, it helped England in Russia. But I think to run away from a game... which was at Wembley, when you think, but we don't want to, you know, okay, fine. Yeah. You could play Spain in the next round.
I had absolutely no fear about England playing Spain.
No, yeah. but it's still a strong opponent. But again, you could play that game, and then it's most likely, again, the winner of Group F, you would think, again, on form, we stress that, in the quarterfinal, and then Belgium and Italy, or Italy in the semi-final, again, going on form. But I think it's a bit of a fool's errand to try and start mapping this out, because England genuinely could be out in second round, which is why it's such a huge game, because I think if England can get over that hurdle, because England's record against big sides in knockout games in tournament history is shit. Yes. I can't stress that enough.
Really
it is
poor.
Piss poor. Yeah. You have to go back to Euro 96 to say penalties against Spain, but it wasn't the big Spain side. I don't think it was a big side, but still 90, you could say Belgium, but again, arguably.
They had life and death against Belgium and Cameroon.
But other than that, you have to go back to 66,
you do,
genuinely.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, I want England to avoid France, but I actually am feeling quite positive ahead of them, these teams all playing tonight. We don't know what they're going to look like tonight. Mm-hmm. Andy was very critical of Portugal in the game against Germany. He said he thought they were really poor. I kind of agree with that.
Yeah.
Germany, they are good. They've shown that they're better than people are saying, and it's ridiculous to kind of say they're not good. It's not a vintage Germany team, though. So I would be relatively comfortable playing Germany or Portugal now.
Mm.
But France, I want us to avoid at all costs. So what needs to happen? France not to draw.
France, I think I'm right in saying, although I could be wrong with the way things are going, but I think if France and Portugal draw, and we presume that Germany beat Hungary,
then we get France.
Then France would be that would be second. But of course, you know, with Spain, as I say, I think Spain, I mean, certainly Luis Enrique thinks that they're going to come good at some point soon. He described them like a bottle of cava about to be uncorked. As soon as we take that cork out, as soon as we produce a complete performance and get the kind of win that gives us confidence, our best version will come out. He sort of tailed off there, because when he says as soon as we're uncorked we're going to go, and then he says as soon as we're uncorked and we produce a complete performance and we get the win, it's kind of
it's underwhelming for
it
not delivery.
Spain have been, haven't they? It's been, let's be honest, boring crab football bullshit.
Yeah, it has. It's been
they're going to knock us out.
Look, it's a Saturday night. Marcus had tickets to go and see a reformed Oasis. Right. That didn't happen. Oh. So he's gone to the pub at the end of the road to watch No Wasis. And Spain, tribute act in their 2010 Spain.
Yeah.
And England, I know England can't play them in the second group now, second round now.
Could be the quarter. If
it could be.
Anyway, this is...
If it comes to that, Marcus, I'm telling you something now. England have conceded, what, 5 shots on target the whole game, the whole tournament? If you think Morata is going to score one of them, you're in dream world.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
But to go back
what
to
you're saying, you give him 5 in a game and he's
I'll give him 5. Give him 5.
He did score in the last game, lest we forget. But I mean, yeah, to go back to your Oasis and Oasis analogy, you're absolutely right. But we still have a good old sing song at Oasis.
Yes.
Have a lovely time.
They look like a ghost of themselves, don't they? It's a really strange thing.
Rafael van der Vaart, obviously a former Netherlands international, he describes Spain as horrible and saying all they do is pass from side to side.
I'm surprised to hear an ex-Holland international being so opinionated. I mean, he's right. And of course, you know, part of the whole fun of all this whole jamboree doing this podcast is that, you know, you say some stuff and people, and it comes back to haunt you and stuff. Look, I'm happy to take it on the chin if I get proven wrong.
They need to win, though, Luke.
Spain look like they have no ability to consistently score goals.
But they really need to win.
They do. They're not even through yet.
To guarantee their progression, they need to win. And again, a draw opens up the 3 points, who's got what and all that kind of nonsense.
They've got two draws and they've scored one goal.
Yeah.
As simple as that. Mm. So, I mean, I don't think
whereas we've got two wins and two goals.
It's not beyond the realms of possibility that Slovakia could get to use that phrase again, could give Spain a bloody nose.
Mm. Yeah. Well, we shall see later.
We
shall see later, everybody. Whatever happens, though, myself, Vish and Jim will be back tomorrow in your ears to pore over who England have got in the next round and all the other sort of permutations.
You talk about those teams as well, though, right?
Oh,
right, just
so.
About England. Treat yourself to another easy.
We'll give it a little mention. If you're enjoying the Football Ramble, everybody, do get over to the review sections on Apple or wherever you get your pods and give us 5 stars because we are 5 stars.
Yeah, there's 3 of us in here at the moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
But give us 5 stars.
If you disagree with that, then just lie.
It's not that difficult to do. That's the thing. Go. You've got the phone in your hand anyway, presumably.
Yeah, yeah.
Find the spot. Give it 5 stars. It means nothing to you. Mm. It means an awful lot to us. I think it would be a nice thing to do.
Absolutely right. Thank you very much, Luke Moore.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody. See you tomorrow.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
When England get knocked out, I'm not doing the show now. After what I've said today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.